ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And throughout the week on the podcast, I'm joined by the brightest political minds at the ABC to wade through the political spin and bring you the analysis you need to know.
No, I think they are hedging. I just don't think you can draw a conclusion from their hedging. And I think everyone's looking for a conclusion in the hedging.
We go beyond the headlines, digging into the key political stories of the day and making sure we have a little bit of fun along the way.
We're always talking about polls.
Poll. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
A brand new bulletin from the Reserve Bank is out today, capturing how Australians experience and understand the economy. And while public awareness for the RBA is high, survey results seem to suggest that people don't have a great handle on how inflation is affected by interest rates. So what problem does this present for the RBA, whose one blunt tool is to toggle rates? And a new set of draft recommendations from the ASX's Advisory Group on Corporate Governance raises the question, can diversity targets influence a company's economic outcome? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Daniel Ziffer.
And I'm ABC business reporter Steph Chalmers.
So Steph, we talk a lot about the Reserve Bank. Our central bank has been surveying Australians. What are they finding out?
Yeah, I feel like a little bit of a nerd this morning because I got quite excited about this, but it is interesting and bear with me, I'll tell you why. So the RBA has been doing a new survey of Australians. In the end, they got to about 9,000 people and they surveyed them across 2025 into early this year. So they did various waves of nationally representative sets of respondents. So this is supposed to be quite a thorough survey. And they were essentially asking them about how they understand the economy and then also how the RBA works and whether they trust the RBA. So there were some really interesting findings in there, which, you know, part of this kind of felt a little bit more like an economics quiz than a survey, but, you know, don't get too freaked out. It was quite interesting. So they first were asking about people's top concerns, and Australians were citing inflation as their top concern, which I think the RBA would be happy about because that, you know, shows that the message they've been banging on about, that inflation is bad, is getting through. And it was interesting to see the other concerns people had around employment and wages. That was more prominent among younger people. And then housing was another big concern for people, more prominent amongst renters and younger cohorts. So that was one part of it. And then there were some other fascinating details as well.
Well, let's get into that. I mean, I think this stuff is very cool, Steph, as we are also through the office considered to be probably the coolest unit, I think, easily. To what extent do Australians understand what the RBA is trying to do?
Yeah, so this is where it got kind of granular and I guess quite consequential as well for the RBA. So first they asked respondents what they thought higher interest rates would do to the economy and employment. And so about 50% of respondents correctly assessed that higher interest rates would be expected to slow the economy and employment. But there were about 30% of respondents who thought that higher interest rates would increase economic activity and employment. So that's, I guess, a bit of a misunderstanding there of how monetary policy is traditionally thought to work. But then kind of a more concern for the RBA, they asked them what they thought interest rates would do to inflation. Only 25% of respondents correctly assessed that higher interest rates would ultimately lead to lower inflation. And it was more than half thought that higher interest rates would lead to higher inflation. And that's a big problem for the RBA because you often hear this sentiment come up when they raise interest rates and, you know, they're saying, hey, we're doing this because prices are spiraling out of control. We can't let it get worse. And then the sentiment is, why are you hitting us with higher mortgage rates when prices everywhere else are rising? Aren't you making this worse? And I think this survey really shows that people don't get what the RBA is trying to do with its main tool.
There's either a massive cohort of contrarian economists out there, or the RBA, and I guess the media as well, are failing to explain these concepts of what the Reserve Bank is trying to do. And I guess the bluntness of the tool that it has, where lifting interest rates, making money more expensive, making debt more expensive, is meant to dampen that heat in the economy, is meant to slow the rate of price rises so that we can kind of get supply and demand to catch up and match up.
Yeah, exactly. And the other concerning part is obviously what you've described is one of the ways monetary policy is transmitted. So if you're paying more in interest costs, you just have less money to spend on other stuff. That reduces demand in the economy. So hopefully that contributes to slowing price rises and bringing inflation down. But the other mechanism that the RBA talks about is inflation expectations. So that's how people behave because of where they think prices are heading. So if you're sitting here today and you want to buy a new TV, it's $700, and you're hearing all this stuff about inflation running out of control, you might think, I'm just going to get that TV now for $700 because it could be $800 in 2 months' time. And then the RBA, through raising interest rates, part of that is trying to send a signal to, hey, we are clamping down on inflation. You don't need to rush out and buy the TV now. We are controlling price rises, and they want to bring down demand currently to help inflation slow. And if people think that higher interest rates are going to increase prices, then that kind of adds to that effect of people thinking, oh God, interest rates have just gone up. That means stuff is going to get even more expensive than I already was hearing it was going to get. I think that is a problem there. And they discussed in this paper about how that effect is dampened. And it is really important for people to understand what they're trying to do so that it can actually work.
And so much of the RBA's work appears to be what we call jawboning both the market and society, basically sending out signals saying this is what's going to happen. If you change your behaviour now, it might not have to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So this is almost a lot of the jawboning seems to kind of be at a higher level, but it's almost like what's the point of jawboning the population to think, hey, hang on, there might be another interest rate rise if it almost has the opposite effect and people think, oh, there's going to be another interest rate rise, things are going to keep getting more expensive. It almost has, you know, a counterintuitive effect. So part of what they said is there's a real need for effective, clear, simple communications to people. I think we've seen some of that in the public communications from Michelle Bullock. I mean, obviously we're covering this stuff day in, day out, so yes, it's hard to distinguish between the messages getting through to us and other people, but I have heard her really repeat simple phrases like high inflation hurts everyone. You know, interest rates only hurt some people because people are saying, why are you doing this to us, essentially? Mm. And she keeps repeating that phrase, high inflation hurts everyone. So I'm sure part of those efforts are, hey, can you simplify your communications, try and get this message through to people? But I'm wondering if, I don't know if you remember a few years ago, there was actually, I think it was Jamaica's central bank had a bit of a reggae YouTube video explaining.
We could definitely do this.
Yeah, I think we could get Michelle Bullock, you know, some sort of interpretive dance thing going on might be the way to go. Who knows?
I'll talk to their comms person. I think we can make this happen for the next meeting in August. Well, Steph, this has been a very cool chat. I think this is going to go nuts on TikTok. Now let's talk about corporate governance principles. So the advisory group on corporate governance, there's kind of essentially a new one. Now, interestingly, the chair is the former head of the RBA, the governor, Philip Lowe. It's this kind of expert advisory body. This group makes non-binding recommendations that essentially flow through to listed companies. If it's done something very surprising with regards to board diversity, what have they said?
Yeah, so there was a push for there to be a higher mandate, or as you say, it's non-binding, but a higher guideline for board diversity in terms of gender diversity, bringing that up to 40% of boards made up of women. They are now trying to bring that back down to 30%, which you'd think is surprising, not only given it's kind of moving in the opposite direction, but also that it's already below where more boards are sitting. So I know you've covered a lot around the gender pay gap. What was your read?
Well, the directorships at the ASX kind of 200, 300 is about 38% of women. From my understanding, the population's about 50-50, heading towards 51% for women. There's been great strides in the diversity of boards. I think in doing that, they've probably masked one of their more substantial problems, which is that essentially you now have in Australia's club of ASX 200 directors, a better split of genders, but you still have essentially the same people with the same outlook and the same life experience, but a much better gender mix. We've done very poorly on getting a better diversity from across our very geographically and internationally diverse community. We do appallingly with getting people who even have particular expertise. We have large companies that deal entirely with consumers. They have a consumer base in the millions. They won't have anyone on the board from a consumer background or with particular consumer expertise. I've always found it astonishing. You'll have companies that might have hundreds of thousands of staff and they have no staff representative on the board, or they have no one with particular expertise in dealing with massive workforces on the board. So it still seems very clubby, and I can't see how reducing this non-binding target from 40%, which is already less than the percentage of women in the world, back down to 30 is going to make things better.
Yeah, and I think the reaction we've heard from some of the super funds that have been among those actually pushing for these changes was kind of, you know, poo-pooing a bit what Philip Lowe was saying. He was saying there's no compelling evidence that 40% versus 30% will lead to better performance of companies and shareholder value, because that has actually been one of the arguments we've heard raised by the super funds in this push, and also just more generally in the investment community. We've been shown evidence that companies that are more gender balanced at the board and leadership level actually deliver a stronger performance. So the argument that this isn't just a good social or, you know, policy move, this is really a good investment move. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. The ASX has obviously had a lot of scrutiny on it itself, governance-wise, over the last year. There's been various, you could only say disasters, but that's a topic for another time.
Let's just remind people that the ASX was recently fined by ASIC for misleading the stock market. Yes, the stock market that it runs.
Yes, so there's a whole lot of other issues there, but it is interesting, I guess, seeing Philip Lowe in this new role in public life after being the RBA governor, having to kind of take it to some of these other institutions like the super funds.
Well, there's nothing better than leaving a job and saying exactly what you think. What does former RBA governor Philip Lowe think about the economy, Steph?
Yes, another rosy note. He's not feeling too good about it. He gave some interviews in light of this paper coming out from the ASX on corporate governance, and he said he expects there to be an ongoing stagnation in living standards. He said we have had no net growth in per capita income for 7 or 8 years, and he's not optimistic that the situation will improve. So I guess probably exactly what Michelle Bullock, his successor, doesn't want to hear from where she's sitting. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that's received.
Obviously, former Governor Philip Lowe, a towering figure in the economic life of Australia, and his thoughts have a weight. He obviously did promise that interest rates would be held very low for a number of years, which lured a lot of people into borrowing money before they then rocketed up as inflation took hold, the Ukraine was invaded by Russia, and lots of other things. So always difficult to measure. He's obviously not at the RBA anymore. He doesn't have access to as much information as they do, but he does have a substantial weight of history about how the economy works and where we're going at the moment. Well, that's it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send us in a question, email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. That's abcbusinessdaily, all one word, @abc.net.au. Steph, a joy to chat. Catch you soon.
Bye.